Sporty New Year's greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Let's kick off in Abuja, Nigeria, where the African football spotlight is shining on this Thursday evening. The Confederation of African Football, CAF, is holding its annual awards ceremony in Nigeria's political capital. The biggest prize to be handed out is the 2016 African Player of the Year trophy. The three finalists are Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang of Gabon and Borussia Dortmund, who won the award last year, Riyad Mahrez of Algeria and Leicester City, and Sadio Mane of Senegal and Liverpool. Another award to be presented in Abuja is the African Player of the Year based in Africa. The three finalists in this category are the Ugandan Dennis Onyango, Zimbabwean player Kama Biliat, and the Zambian Rainford Kalaba. Onyango and Biliat both play for the South African club Mamelodi Sundowns, which won the 2016 CAF Champions League title. And Kalaba is based in Lubumbashi in the Democratic Republic of Congo with the club TP Mazembe. Thursday night's ceremony in Abuja will also feature several top African musicians, including Femi Kuti, the son of Nigeria's late Afrobeat pioneer, Fela Kuti. That's Nigerian musician Femi Kuti with Black Man Know Yourself. Femi is one of the scheduled performers Thursday evening at the annual Confederation of African Football Awards ceremony in Abuja, Nigeria. More African football news. Veteran goalkeeper Essam El Hadary has been included in Egypt's final 23-man squad for the Africa Cup of Nations tournament, which kicks off January 14th in Gabon. El Hadary celebrates his 43rd birthday the following day, January 15th, and he could become the oldest player in Nations Cup history. The record is currently held by fellow Egyptian Hassam Hassan, who was 39 years old when he captained the Pharaohs at the 2006 Nations Cup, which Egypt hosted. The Egyptians won the trophy that year, the fifth of a record 7 Nations Cups won by the country. Only 4 players remain from Egypt's last participation in the Nations Cup finals in 2010, when they won the title for the third time in a row. They are El Hadary, Ahmed Elmo Hamadi, Mohammed Abdul Shafi, and Ahmed Fati. The Pharaohs will kick off their Nations Cup campaign January 17th when they play Mali in Port-Gentil, Gabon. Also in Egypt's group are Ghana and Uganda, who will play each other that same day in Port-Gentil. Earlier this week on the Sunny Side of Sports, Ghana's Israeli coach, Avram Grant, described it as a very challenging first-round group.
My only concern now is to win the African Cup. It's not easy. First, we have a very, very difficult group stage, and we want to do it. I did everything in my power that it will be to help Ghana. I really, really like it here. I like the people. I like everything around. I think some targets we achieved, some targets that I put myself still didn't achieve, but I'm very happy.
Ghana coach Avram Grant says Asamoah John will once again captain the Black Stars at the Nations Cup in Gabon. The 31-year-old John is based in the United Arab Emirates with the club Al Ahly. He's Ghana's all-time leading scorer with 48 goals. Also included on Ghana's 2017 Nations Cup team is defender Jonathan Mensah, who just signed a new 2-year deal with the Columbus Crew in Major League Soccer. The 26-year-old Mensah has previously played for clubs in Russia, France, Spain, and South Africa. Mensah joins fellow Ghanaian Harrison Afful on the Columbus Crew. Afful was also selected for Ghana's Nations Cup team in Gabon. Columbus's head coach, Greg Berhalter, says the club looks forward to Mensah making an immediate impact. He describes Mensah as a physically dominant central defender who's already proven himself on the world's biggest stage. Mensah has played for Ghana at the past two World Cups, and he's made 51 international appearances for the Black Stars. In English Premier League football Wednesday, English midfielder Dele Alli scored on two headers to give host Tottenham a 2-0 victory over top-of-the-table Chelsea. With the win, the Spurs of Tottenham snapped Chelsea's 13-game winning streak. At the post-match news conference at White Hart Lane, Tottenham's Argentine manager Mauricio Pochettino had this to say.
The most important thing was that we show a great character. We were very competitive. That maybe that was the problem last season, that we miss to compete in a better way. What means to be competitive is like today. Play, sometimes suffer, play again a very good team like Chelsea. I think one of the best team on Europe today. After it was a plenty of confidence, I think was a real, very solid performance, and for that make me very proud of them, all the players.
Meanwhile, Mauricio Pochettino's coaching counterpart for Chelsea, the Italian Antonio Conte, realizes Tottenham was a tough opponent.
We are disappointed, but also think that we must be pleased for our run. To win 13 games in a row is not easy in this league. And also today, you lost against a good team, a really strong team. Don't forget that Tottenham fought last season to win the title. And Pochettino is working with this team for many years, and they are improving a lot. And for me, Tottenham is one of the six teams that can fight until the end for to win the title or to find a place in the Champions League.
Chelsea manager Antonio Conte, whose club now leads Liverpool by 5 points and Tottenham by 7 points in the English Premier League. The Women's National Basketball Association celebrated its 20th anniversary season during 2016. The WNBA has both American and international players, And it currently has 12 teams based here in the USA, including one right here in Washington, the Washington Mystics. At the end of the 2016 season, the Los Angeles Sparks were crowned champions for a third time. The Sparks defeated the Minnesota Lynx 3-2 in the WNBA Finals. One of the sports publications that covered the league's 20th anniversary season was ESPN the Magazine, which devoted a special issue to the WNBA and its history. Allison Overholt is the editor-in-chief at ESPN the Magazine. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again as I ask Allison whether the WNBA will expand internationally.
It's a good question. I can't speak to their growth goals because I'm not privy to their, you know, business plans, but women's basketball globally is, again, another area that's been, you know, almost more advanced than it ever has been in the United States. It's funny. I think last year, was it the 15th or the 20th anniversary of one of my favorite movies of all time called Love and Basketball? And, you know, it's an interesting storyline in that movie that all the players, when they finish college, they go and they play pro overseas. So, you know, that's sort of my notion of where the women's game actually, you know, had more traction and was more exciting for a long time prior to the launch of the WNBA here in the United States. So, you know, when I was in high school, I would come to camps in the States in the summer, and I would hear the girls from college teams talk about how they are going to play pro in Greece or in Spain or in Italy or in, you know, in China. And, you know, that's continued to grow. It's continued to be a thing, you know, even now where you have situations like Diana Taurasi playing professionally in Russia, and they actually paid her $1 million last year to sit out her WNBA season because they wanted her to save up her energy to play for their pro team. So it's an interesting challenge for the WNBA. They're in an exciting moment right now. They're turning 20. They've got, you know, a lot of accomplishments to be proud of. But arguably, the game is more advanced in other countries. So if they want to expand internationally, it'll be interesting to see how they evolve in that direction.
Are there one or two memorable American sports moments involving women that really stand out for you?
Oh, sure. I would imagine those moments are probably different for everyone, depending on what formative stages you were in your own life and where those sports moments intersect. So, you know, for me, being a kid in the early 80s, watching the Nadia Comaneci TV movie over and over on repeat, you know, I would probably say that my first great women's sports memory is Mary Lou Retton in the 1984 Olympics. You know, I remember jumping around my living room like a crazy person when she was doing her floor exercises and watching her vault and thinking she was going to fly through the ceiling and then that huge smile. So that's probably my first women's sports moment. You know, when I was in college the summer the WNBA started, I went to an LA Sparks game for my birthday with three of my high school friends, two of whom had been high school teammates. And for us, it was less about a particular sports moment and more the fact that that league had started. You know, the idea that girls could start to make money playing basketball just felt like everything had changed when we got to see that. And then probably, you know, once I finished college, I remember watching the 1999 Women's World Cup. I was in my first apartment in Washington, D.C., actually, where you are.
Okay.
And, you know, it was one of those little basement apartments. I don't even think I had cable. I was watching the game on this tiny television and just, you know, screaming my head off when that team won that game. And so it was very interesting to remember that when we were working on Women's World Cup coverage last summer here at ESPNW and, you know, watching the entire tournament and then seeing the U.S. Women's National Team reclaim that title last summer and actually being a professional teammate with Julie Foudy. You know, there was a moment where I sort of sat back and I remembered watching her win the World Cup, and I just sort of shook my head and I said, you know, man, how is it possible that I'm teammates with Julie Foudy now here at ESPNW? And I remember watching that game and just thinking, you know, she was the greatest thing in the entire world.
Brandi Chastain, one of the heroes or heroines of that 1999 Women's World Cup. And she recently came out, Allison, with an interesting story about she's going to donate her brain after she dies for study, medical purposes.
We had coverage of that on ESPNW.com, and it's a really important story, I think, because in all of the coverage of concussions, brain trauma, the links with sports, It's been really crucial to have smart reporting on that, you know, over the last few years. But that's an example of where women have largely been absent from the storyline. And in fact, there's a tremendous amount of research out there that, you know, women can be at times more susceptible to concussions because of, you know, differences in physiology and different ways that, you know, the female body responds in particular situations in soccer particularly has been highlighted, you know, as a place where we should be looking a little bit more closely at what the protocols are and what training regimens are and what we need to know about keeping women athletes safe. So with all of the attention and the spotlight on, you know, football and concussions, there's an important piece of research and coverage to be done on the effects of brain trauma with sports like soccer for men and women, but really remembering that it's important to have women in that kind of research and as a focus of those kinds of efforts.
Allison Overholt is the editor-in-chief of both ESPNW and ESPN The Magazine. Allison, thank you for chatting with us on the Sunny Side of Sports.
Thanks for having me.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Hey, g'day, mates. Remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right. Give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively Sunny Man on the Sunny Side of Sports. Right here on the Voice of America.
Thanks again for that red-hot listening tip, Barry. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty New Year's greetings, Andrew.
Sporty New Year's greetings, Sonny. Good to be here with you in 2017.
Andrew, what is trending in the sports world on this Thursday?
Well, a lot of talk on social media today about Roger Federer, of course, making his comeback after some injuries in taking some time off out of tennis, playing at the Hopman Cup, where he played, as we talked about the other day, the first match in 178 days. Well, just a day after Serena Williams was upset, Roger Federer was upset at the Hopman Cup, losing to Germany's Alexander Zverev. And this scoreline just gives you an idea of how great this match was. He lost 7-6, 6-7, 7-6. So
Three
very tight sets, 2.5 hours of play. So a really well-played match between the both of them. Not as big of an upset as Serena losing, because Federer is making that comeback after the time off, after the injuries. And Alexander Zverev is ranked 24th. In the world, so he's no slouch. But it was surprising for fans, and same kind of questions we saw with Serena losing, we're seeing now for Roger Federer. How fit is he going to be for the Australia Open? Especially like Serena, he was leading in the first set and he let it slip away. So a lot of question marks about his performance going into Melbourne in the next couple weeks. But on the court, that got a lot of discussion between Federer and Zverev facing off, but in the stands, on the bongo cam, was where the real competition
the
was.
What's the bongo cam?
I have never seen this before, and this is, I guess, a new thing that they have now at the Hopman Cup and some other sporting events where they put a graphic on the bottom of the screen that's bongos, and they take the camera and they film people in the stands, and you're supposed to hit the bongos on the screen as though you're going to drum your arms up and down.
Got to keep the beat.
Yes, keep the beat. Well, Roger Federer just goes at it, you know, with the zeal of somebody who has won 17 Grand Slam championships. He is just hammering away at that that animated bongo. And they cut to Alexander Zverev, and he's a little less animated than Roger Federer. But the Hotman Cup tweeting out this video saying when the beat drops featuring Roger Federer and Alexander Zverev, so they could have a career maybe in bongo playing. Federer even tweeted the video, said, at least I have a backup career as a bongo player. So he had some fun with it. And it's the people saying he may have lost the match, but he won the bongo competition. So that was a nice little viral video that we saw out of the Hotman Cup. And then after Federer and Zverev played, they played the mixed doubles, Federer playing with Belinda Bencic for Switzerland, Zverev playing with Andrea Petkovic of Germany. And, you know, they do the ceremonial coin toss to start to see who serves and who receives. Well, there's a young girl, Lily. She's 10 years old. She's a huge fan of not just Team Switzerland, but Roger Federer. Roger Federer comes out and she starts bawling. She's crying to meet her idol. She just can't handle it. So Roger Federer comforts her. He puts his hand on her shoulder and says, don't worry, I'll help you out. He kind of guides her through, says, okay, what should I pick? Should I pick heads or should I pick tails? What do you think? She says, pick heads. It was heads. So Roger told her, you've already helped us win today. So a really nice moment that he comforted her. And so he, even aside from a bongo player and a tennis player, he might be, you know, maybe a counselor or a social worker or something. Got a lot of career options that he could go for.
It sounds like Roger, even though he did lose at the Hotman Cup, has the right kind of frame of mind heading into the Australian Open.
I think that's really important. And something we've talked about with Serena Williams, that Serena Williams says her biggest competitor is Serena Williams, by which she means the mental state. And even Andy Murray, he's been kind of chided for letting get to his head. I think that Roger is loose. He's having a good time. And I think that's going to show in his tennis, that between the physical rehab and the mental kind of freshness, I think he has a chance of doing quite well.
Andrew, speaking of good times, our VOA listeners can have a good time by checking out my Facebook and Twitter accounts. My Facebook page is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, a big competition tonight in Montreal, Canada, and that's the World Junior Hockey Championship, pitting Canada against the United States. So our neighbors to the north, and we will face off tonight in Montreal. So you're seeing a lot of gentle kind of teasing back and forth between USA and Canada fans on social media. You're seeing fans decked out in the gear. And you're seeing a lot of talk about the dramatic semifinal matches. Of course, the U.S. had to beat Russia to get to the final. Canada had to beat Sweden in some very compelling events, very, very compelling games. And this tweet, I think, is a great one because it kind of encapsulates this, because maybe our listeners aren't the biggest hockey fans out there. Somebody tweeted out, they said, if you aren't passionate about hockey, that's fine. But if you like sports, this is going to be an incredible game to watch. Mm. So I think this is one of those instances, you know, we talk about a lot of different sports on the show. We talk about, you know, UFC fighting and tennis, golf, basketball, football, all these different sports. Whether you're a fan of those sports or not, you know when there are dramatic moments, and I think this is going to be one of those dramatic moments tonight, so it's going to be something to watch for sure and something to monitor on social media.
Andrew, what else is trending out there in the sports world?
Well, finally, this is such a great story. There's a gentleman in France named Robert Marchand, and Robert Marchand has set a new record for the fastest bike ride in the 105-plus age category. He is 105 years old. He just biked 22.5 kilometers, about 14 miles, in an hour at a velodrome in Paris.
Wow.
So he broke that record. He's a former gymnast and a boxer, so he's already very sporty and very spry at 105 years old to make that bike trip and set that record. And this is the quote. This is the quote from him. He said, I'm not here to be a champion. I'm here to prove that to you that at 105 years old, you can still ride a bike. So great quote from him, and lots of congratulations from across the internet. My favorite, I think, is somebody said, age is nothing but a number. And if that's if ever there was someone to prove that, it's Robert Marchand proving that in Paris, biking away. And he even said, you know what, I probably could have gone faster. So maybe at 106, he'll be breaking a new record next year. We certainly hope that he'll be around to do so.
Robert Marchand. Let's give him a sunny side of sports salute, Andrew.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Andrew. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. And that wraps up the January 5th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. government, through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, has provided critical scholastic materials for an estimated 2.8 million boys and girls throughout Ethiopia. USAID's efforts were aimed at protecting vulnerable children's right to education, following one of the worst droughts in Ethiopia in more than 50 years. More than 8.2 million exercise books have been distributed to the most drought-affected districts in the country. In addition, USAID delivered more than 5.5 million pens and pencils to affected schools and communities. USAID contracted Yekatit Paper Converting PLC, a local Ethiopian publishing company, as well as a small business in the United States, to quickly procure and deliver these materials for Ethiopia's most affected students in grades 1 to 8. The Ministry of Education and regional education bureaus played key roles by ensuring the delivery of these materials to local schools. With these critical scholastic materials, USAID and the Ministry of Education have effectively increased students' engagement in the school system and eased the transition back to school for millions of students whose continued education was threatened due to the lingering effects of the recent drought, said USAID Ethiopia Mission Director Leslie Reed. Globally, past experience and research indicate that students who drop out of school are less likely to contribute as productive members of their communities and earn less throughout their lives while facing an increased risk of early marriage, trafficking, and child labor. USAID is one of the leading education bilateral donors in Ethiopia and works in close collaboration with a range of partners to reach 15 million Ethiopian children with improved educational services. The United States is proud to work with its partner, Ethiopia, to help provide the children of Ethiopia the materials they need for the quality education they deserve.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impuga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. On Saturdays, tune in at 4:30 and 17:30 UTC, and on Sundays at 3:30 and 14:30 UTC. Or subscribe to the PCUSA podcast. Just go to our homepage at voanews.com and click on podcasts. Also, we love to hear from you. Send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Carol Castiel VOA. That's Press Conference USA on VOA Africa.
VOA News.
VOA. When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.